I'm Esperanza Phoenix, and you're listening to Unpacking Life's Crazy. In this podcast, I share a lifetime of unusual experiences, unfortunate events, and frank conversations with others like myself who use humor to cope with the physical disabilities, mental health conditions, and unique life circumstances which set us apart from societal norms. In this podcast, we discuss controversial and adult topics. From sleep hygiene, fasting, and stories of raising kids in Costa Rica to interviews with disabled comedians or transgender youth. Life can be a crazy journey. Let's unpack it together. For this episode of Unpacking Life's Crazy, I interviewed Dante, the suit man, Barnett, who is a comedian and producer of comedy shows. He also happens to be a black man with Asperger's and PTSD. So his experiences are unique, and he has personal experience with some of the social issues our country has been dealing with lately. As I was editing this podcast, some of the topics we discussed became even more poignant when the media released body cam footage of the murder of Ronald Green at the hands of Louisiana troopers. This incident took place 2 years ago, yet this information is just now coming to light. In this episode, we discuss some of the systemic problems that have led to this kind of police brutality and some of the possible solutions. So let's get on to that interview with Dante, the suit man, Barnett. Hello, Dante. Thank you so much for joining me on this episode of Unpacking Life's Crazy. This is awesome. I really appreciate it. So you're a comedian out of Seattle?
I'm in Seattle. I'm based out of Seattle. I produce more than I do comedy. But yeah, I'm a comedian and a producer. The biggest reason why you're probably talking to me isn't my comedy. It's my production. I do Suitman Productions.
And ultimately, the biggest reason I'm talking to you is we have a mutual friend, Benny Shakes, the disabled comedian out of the UK, who is a lovely human being. I actually went and listened to one of your podcasts, Dating with Disabilities, and I was shocked to hear a familiar voice. I was like, hey, wait a minute, that's Benny. That's really cool.
Are you talking about Benny? Yeah. Worked with him a couple times. I've even got his accent down. Yeah, I've worked with Benny a lot. I've got his cadence down. I did a little impression of him the other day. He was not happy. He was happy. He was just, you're a little shit. He didn't say that. I don't sound like that. Yes.
Yeah, it takes him a while to get to his words, but they're all in there and he'll get to them eventually. Watch your step. He'll be making fun of you on stage next.
I'm not scared of Benny. I'm bigger. Well, actually, no, he's taller than me. I found out he's 6'4". What the fuck? You're 6'4"? What are you doing at 6'4"?
So, Dante, you also happen to be disabled. I understand that you have autism. Asperger's specifically. So, I mean, I don't even know how they differentiate the degrees of the spectrum or how that all works. I do have several friends that are on the spectrum and a few that have Asperger's. So I personally don't know how it's all defined, but you have your own interesting challenges in the way you perceive the world as opposed to what neurotypical people do, is my understanding of it.
I wouldn't say that. I mean, I'm neurodivergent too. I've got anxiety and PTSD. I'm also Asperger's. So it's not so much that I have a different way of looking at the world, it's just I don't look disabled.
Yeah. There's that. Well, that's me too. I'm also PTSD, anxiety, and actually another weird disability that you mentioned on that particular podcast, which is Erlene syndrome.
Yeah, that was we talked to Emma Blue Eyes about that.
Yeah. So that's another weird thing that I happen to have. What would you say is the biggest challenge for you with dealing in, I guess, business or comedy situations with your Asperger's? What would you say is the biggest challenge of that?
My size. So I had the police called on me yesterday. So I'm very direct when I want to explain what's going on with me. And I'm very direct when I say, hey, look, you pissed me off. Mm-hmm. I'm not allowed to do that. Mm. And at my size, I guess that intimidates, scares, whatever you want to call it. It's bullshit. It's racism. That's really all it is, because I'm not threatening anybody per se. I'm just saying, hey, I'm pissed off and I don't like how you fucking talk to me. Right. But I'm not allowed to do that. I'm not, like, I literally went to T-Mobile. My phone was supposed to be there Saturday. It wasn't there Saturday. Never got a call on Monday. I called after I got done with my morning walk and said, hey, is my phone there? And the lady goes, well, if your phone was here, UPS would let you know. Mm-hmm. I said, that's fine and dandy, ma'am. I was just calling to see if it's there. And she looks over, goes, what's your name? And sure shit, it's there. And I go, so is there a reason why I haven't been messaged yet? And she said, well, you know, UPS this, UPS that. And I'm just like, you know, you could have called the person whose phone it was when you got it. Mm-hmm. And instead of explaining that, I said, ma'am, I'll be there in a second. So I get there. I'm less than a couple miles away. I get there. The guy's checking me in. I'm being very short. I'm like, I'm here to pick up my phone. What's your name? Dante. Here's my ID. He's like, you seem to be in a bad mood. I said, yes, sir. I've been waiting forever to get my phone. It doesn't seem that serious to you guys for me to get it. So, yeah, I'm kind of frustrated. Well, I said, you know, this is going to be a 20-minute process. And I'm like, great, cool. What's your fucking point? I'm let's get the process going, right?
Like, all right, let's do it.
Let's go. Hello. Let's fucking go. So the guy starts to come out with my phone, then he turns around and comes back in, and then 5 minutes later he comes out and decides to tell me, yeah, your phone hasn't been checked into our system yet, so we can't give it to you.
Oh, no.
Then I said, at this point, I just want to talk to a manager. I just talked to somebody who told me to come get my phone, and now you're telling me I can't have my phone? The guy's like, well, actually, the lady you talked to is the manager, so I'll just have her deal with you. So the lady comes out and goes, yes, sir, we can't give you our phone. Our system's down. Great, cool. I just talked to you. And you told me to come get my phone. Well, I've been off, and today's my first great kid. No. Don't give a shit about any of that. I just talked to you. Maybe you should have made sure it was available for me before you told me to come in. But I don't need you talking to me like that.
No,
talking to you like what? Well, you're being disrespectful. How? You're the manager, and you're making excuses on why you're not fulfilling your job. And now it's, well, I just got here today. Well, who worked yesterday? Well, I don't know that. I just got there. Well, what the fuck do you know? And I didn't even say fuck at this point. I'm still trying to stay calm. She says, sir, you're being disrespectful. How? Between my size and my mental capabilities, I'm not allowed to express my frustration. And that is the hardest part. Because when people, the lady then turned, I need you to leave. For what?
Oh, no.
And the other thing, too, that I see in a lot of the situation is if a person is in a position of power, let's say, whether it's management or law enforcement or whatever, they think it is well within their right to be completely disrespectful and non-communicative with other people, and that it's everybody else's job to, yes, ma'am, yes, sir, whatever you say, authority figure, sir, but you're the customer. And when I was waiting tables, it was our motto that the customer is always right. Even if the customer is a complete asshole and you're going to like talk about them behind their back. But as long as they're sitting at their table, you have to, yes, sir, weirdo gluten-free person who wants a tuna melt without bread. Yes, whatever you fucking want. But in situations like that, what do you think was the factor that thought that they could be so disrespectful to you? Could it perhaps be that you're not white?
Oh, that's definitely it. You know what I mean? Like, you're being disrespectful because I told you to stop talking over me. I literally stop talking over me, ma'am. Are you going to let me finish? She just, it's not disrespectful to tell somebody to stop talking over you. It's not disrespectful to tell somebody, ma'am, you're giving me excuses. The fact that you don't want to address this problem as a manager and take responsibility for what's going on now shows your lack of accountability. And when she finally, well, I can understand why you're mad. I said, finally, like that. And then it was, oh, yeah, now you have to leave. So I finally said, finally, you get why I'm pissed off. I'm arguing with you for 30 minutes over a phone I can't get when you told me to come get it. This is my fault. And now that I said, finally, in a loud tone, that's the straw for you to say I'm aggressive and tell me you're going to call the cops on me, which is a threat of fucking violence. Call the cops. Bring them here. I want to meet them. I want them to tell me they're going to arrest me because I told this lady to do her job. I can't explain to you how frustrating it is. And like I told somebody, when you're that mad, because you know you're being treated different because you're race, nothing I can do about it. Really, I want to beat the fucking shit out of you. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm 6'2". I'm 280 pounds. When people treat me like that, I want to beat the shit out of them because you're disrespecting me in a level and in a way that is there's no apology for.
Right.
There's no apology for treating me like shit because I'm big and I'm black.
It's so pervasive. I think some of the people have gotten woke to it during the last year of it being in their faces and being stuck at home and actually getting to watch the videos and stuff. But what it comes down to, certainly instances where the police are involved, is the confrontation begins with the police officers being extremely disrespectful and not treating a person as a human being and a citizen from the get-go, from the moment they pull over the car. From the, you know, it's like you've got a person of color who has to be, yes, sir, officer, sir. What would you like, officer, sir? What do you want, officer, sir? And the officer is like, give me your registration. What are you doing here? Why are you in this neighborhood? Why does your car look like that? Blah, blah, blah. It's like, excuse me. None of the things that you just stated are against the law. None of those things are any reason at all for you to stop somebody. And as far as that poor young man who was murdered for what, expired registration was the initial reason they pulled him over or some bullshit, which in a state where they weren't issuing registration because of pandemic. So that's a moot point.
$396 fine in Minnesota that he got. He was really killed for. But really, right, that fine was based upon something he couldn't even have completed.
Right. He also a warrant that he didn't know about, that wasn't, the warrant wasn't delivered like it was supposed to. He didn't even know it existed. Whatever. Right. All the officer had to do was say, you know, I pulled you over because of this. I see that you have a warrant in such and such place for this. Are you aware of that? Oh, I understand you are not aware of that. Do we have your current address? Thank you. I will take down your current address. We expect you to go to court and take care of that. And if it is not taken care of by such and such date, somebody will come to your house and talk to you about that. That's the entire conversation that could have taken place. It was not a violent warrant. He was not a risk to anybody at the time. That is a simple conversation that could have ended it all. There was no reason at all for them to have even stopped him and made the decisions that they made. In so many circumstances, it's like that. Did you ever watch that old-timey cop show? What was it, the Andy Griffith Show?
Yeah, I didn't really watch it, but yeah.
You know, it was on. There were reruns on. This tiny little town of Mayberry, the deputy was such a hair trigger, they took away his bullets. And every single thing that happened in that town was dealt with like, hey, you know you're not supposed to be doing that. And then the drunk guy who got locked up like every other night until he sobered up and sent home. Why can't we be dealing with our social issues in a social way instead of this authoritarian bullshit, which is just so slanted towards racism? And I have many friends and actually relatives, because one whole side of my family is brown, who, if I do the same exact behavior as my cousin, one of us is going to jail and it isn't me. And I know that, but there are a lot of people in this country who are just figuring that out.
Well, that's the thing, is nobody cares. I'm at that point where I'm just, you know, I'm appalled. I'm frustrated. I'm undiagnosed Asperger's, right?
So how does one get diagnosed with Asperger's? What is the, I mean, I don't even know the process for diagnosis. In fact, I just realized that I was, when I was in school, they diagnosed me as ADHD. And I'm realizing now that, you know, that's not something you outgrow. So I'm actually do have attention deficit disorder, but I'm an adult. So I don't even know what one does about that or what relevance it has. So I don't know what the process is for diagnosing an adult with Asperger's either.
Well, that's the thing, is there's no, I don't understand the whole diagnosis thing. I'm not going to lie to you. But what I do understand is that in the black community, we're not getting the diagnosis. Black community, yeah, we're mostly being seen as, it's one of those where when we look at these teachers, they don't understand the kids, right? And I've been a paraeducator, I've been a teacher, and the black student will come in and talk as much as the white student, but it's disrespectful or disruptive. Again, all these words that they use. And I remember one time, like, it's like the hot word. Like, you're attacking me. I don't feel, like, if you want the police to come, tell them a person of color makes you feel threatened. They're hot words. Mm-hmm. They're racial hot words that people use. And so when I look at the education system, it's the same thing. there's these racial hot words like intimidating, unteachable, right? Uncoachable, incorrigible. There's all these different, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I saw on your bio that you have many degrees. Could you tell us about those?
Yeah, I've got an AA in web database design. Uh-huh. I've got a bachelor's in information technology and administrative management. And I've got a master's degree in athletic administration.
Wow. So you taught in which education level?
I taught at the college level for a while. I was a paraeducator for middle school and high school for a while. Just a little bit of everything.
Nice.
So you got to go to school and learn a subject, and then you got to get a teacher's degree, and it's the teaching degree is fucking stupid.
Yeah, I kind of felt the same way about teaching. I've been an art instructor. I've worked as a assistant teacher in a resource class. I've worked as a substitute teacher, and I ran an arts academy for children for a little while. So I've taught in those capacities. But at one point when I was working in arts education, my ex, who is actually from Costa Rica, and he's a firefighter, it's like, you should get a teaching degree because it's a government job, blah, blah, blah. I'm, oh, hell no. Oh, hell no. First of all, that's an awful lot of college. And second of all, the way the system is now in elementary school is just so messed up that it's not really designed to teach. It's this weird cookie cutter system that doesn't allow you to really get to know the kids and teach their individual needs and allow them to, for example, follow a train of thought when they get excited about a subject. It's like, oh, I'm sorry, but our block allotment for that particular subject is over now. Let's go do this. So yeah, it's a very frustrating system right now, I think, for anybody who wants to be an educator.
And that's the thing, is I don't think a lot of people know what, like, the education system fucking sucks. We're just going to be honest here. For somebody like me who's goal oriented and you give me a task and I'll finish it, it's great. But even still, it fucking sucks because I got to work at everybody else's pace. Jimmy's fucking slow. Mary's fucking talkative. I don't even like Bob. I'm the only kid in class. Why do I have to do a fucking team project with people I don't want to be with? Then there's the education system is failing so many that it's not even funny. And then if you're a rich white kid, all your mom has to do is make a donation to Harvard and you're going to get in anyway. So who cares?
Right. Well, the other thing too is with us having all this online education and everybody's like, oh, get him back to class, get him back to class. If this had happened when I was a kid, I'd be like, yes, I don't have to go to class. I can learn. I can actually learn and not deal with the bullies and not deal with the, you know, I would have been thrilled to be able to do online education. But then you also have that still is affecting the poorer kids because they don't have high-speed internet. They don't have the equipment that they need. They, you know, they're sharing the streaming service with everybody else in their household. So, it's education. I mean, obviously, there's the racial portion of it, but so much of it is really the income inequality because we pay for our education based on property taxes. So you start out poor, your system is set up to keep you poor.
Basically.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm noticing is like a lot of people don't get that. A lot of people really don't understand that that's what the system is there's no way to really, like, you get lucky, and that's why I laugh at all the Caucasian people that get mad about athletes. Right? Athletes are making millions of dollars. Yeah, and they're controlled by 32 white guys who make billions. Fuck you. You know what I mean? Is that your best fucking answer, right? And it's one of those where I'm just like, I don't get what people don't understand the idea. Like, I talk racism, and the one I get is generational wealth. That's where racism and slavery hurt the most.
Yep.
Is generational wealth. And if the average generation is just 25 years, right, it was only 3 generations ago that black people got rights.
Right. Yep.
Right? If we're talking about freeing slaves, right, and actual the freedom of slaves, we're only 5-6 generations from the emancipation of slaves.
That's true.
In 5 generations, we were supposed to go from owning nothing to billion-dollar families that can pass on generational wealth. Not happening.
Well, not only that, but a lot of the wealthiest families in this nation built that wealth on the backs of slaves. They built their family's wealth by having access to free labor, you know, treating human beings like cattle, using their labor, and building their wealth with it. So, yeah, that's a pretty big thing to atone for. And I personally, since we are recording on Cinco de Mayo, I have a reason to celebrate today because Biden came out and proclaimed May 5th Missing and Murdered Indigenous Peoples Awareness Day, which is great and fine. However, it completely left out that the United States government sanctioned the kidnapping and murder of the indigenous people for 100 years. So you hear people, when we're dealing with the Black Lives Matter protests, are like, oh, this systemic racism doesn't exist. We elected a black guy. It's all fine. They say this isn't America, but it is. The very foundation of America is based on genocide, kidnapping, slave labor. This nation was built on the graves and the backs of brown people. Oh, I left out the Chinese who built most of our railroads. It really has been based on the subjugation of human beings based on the myth of race, because genetically there is only one race, human.
And I think that's the biggest, I love the old, that like the church sayings, like the devil's first trick was making people think he didn't believe, he didn't happen, right? And I think the white man's best trick was making people believe racism wasn't real.
Yeah.
And that's the most infuriating thing I've seen in the last 3 days was I was watching a flashback on Facebook to them showing Oprah Winfrey in 1992 talking to people about the Buster, what's his name? Was it Buster Douglas who got the shit beat out of him? I can't even think of dude's name.
Rodney King.
There Rodney we go. King. And so it said there were Karens. The title of the video on Facebook is "There Were Karens in the 90s, right? And I just had to laugh, and I'm watching. This white girl gets up there, and she goes, you know, I'm not saying it was right for them to do that to this guy, but obviously they found him not guilty, so he must have not done something wrong, and it was just a bit stupid. And she was, I'm an educated person, and just trying to scream how she's educated and all these things, and you guys are, I'm not stupid. No, you're just ignorant. And the lady was like, look, I'm 78 years old. I'm educated too. You don't kick a dog, so why would it be okay to kick a man 69 times in his face?
Uh-huh.
And the first thing she wanted to say, what did he do for them to do it? And she's, are you stupid? Are you not listening? There's no reason to kick anybody in the face 69 fucking times.
That's true. There is no justification for that ever.
Right. And so if that's the truth, right, and if that's the reality of what we're saying, then it's not so much that people are stupid. It's not so much that people aren't racist. It's that people don't want to accept that they are racist.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've listened to my podcast at all, but I grew up traveling the powwow circuit with my father. So kind of immersed in the Native American culture. But also just when you're on the powwow circuit, you see people from all walks of life. Sometimes they're there to experience the culture. Sometimes they're there to play Indian. Sometimes, you know, they're just curious. Whatever. You get people of every color, shape, size, economics, lots of different kinds of people. And I was fortunate just to be fascinated by people. If a person had a darker skin than me, then I found that kind of fascinating. If they were super pale, that was kind of fascinating too. I never had it within my family background to denigrate a person because of things they had no control over, like their skin color or a disability or their economic stance. So in that way, I was really, really lucky. So as I've gone out into the world and been in different environments, I find it in some ways confusing and very frustrating where these people get their blind hatred of people for something that is so irrelevant
I mean, I disagree. It's not so much irrelevant. I mean, it's racism is understandable to some degree. And I'm not going to be lie to you on that one. It is understandable to some sort of degree. When you get to prison, you get to a new environment, you know, you're going to associate with those that you look like, right? And so I don't know if racism is the right word. There are prejudices are understood. I think that's a better way of putting it. Mm-hmm. Like the idea of there being
prejudiced. Oh, yeah. People may, you know, because somebody is different. I can understand, you know, seeing somebody as different and being threatened by that.
And I think it's where it goes from being threatening to being a lack of accountability. And what I mean by that is I talked to a buddy the other day about how when you're a comedian, at some point you go from, hey, this is my fault that I'm not getting, you go from, hey, why is everybody getting all these chances that I'm not getting, this sucks, to I'm going to create my own chances. And for most Caucasian people who are racist, they don't make that change. It's not, and that's why I brought up the idea of sports. It's not, hey, that black guy's faster than me and he works hard and he's more talented. It's like all these black people get an extra chance to go to the NBA and make millions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But they come from poor households, and on average, both their parents on there, and on average, there's a 1 in a million chance. So it doesn't increase the average GDP or gross national for those within that community.
Well, not only that, but if you break it down to just the number of people who actually make it to a professional career versus when I was a massage therapist, the number of people whose knees and backs and ankles I worked on, who they busted themselves out when they were in high school because they were so desperate to become a professional athlete because that was their way out. And instead, they tore a ligament in their knee or whatever. And now they're literally dealing with a lifelong crippling injury because they wanted that so, so bad. Because in their minds, they saw that as their only way to the top.
And that's what I'm seeing. That's the worst part about youth sports, AAU, whatever you want to call it, is most of these people are selling their kids' vacation time, their time as a family, to chase sports. And if that kid never becomes anything, then what did you waste?
Yeah, if they tear their ACLU when they're a junior.
And then that's the other part is it's one of those where, you know, there's so many more opportunities for academic scholarships than athletic scholarships, right? There's more scholarships for unique shit like being a left-handed drummer. Every year, David Letterman gives out a scholarship to a left-handed drummer. I don't know if you know that. Right?
I did not know that.
But there's all these scholarships that, you know what I mean, you can get and nobody knows about because people are just looking at the regular way to get scholarships. It's
a great kid in my hometown of Sonora, talented guy, went all the way to nationals for Poetry Out Loud program where you do poetry readings. And shout out to Levi Lowe. You're awesome. Hope you listen to my pod. You know, they've got scholarships like that in the arts and academics as well. And that really needs to get put out there a lot more, especially for youth of color, as, hey, there are other ways out, using your brain and your talent besides busting up your body, too.
And that's what I don't think people will get. And then there's the other part that some people don't want to use their brain. Like I asked somebody, my grandma's this big. Pardon my French. And it's not even my grandma. It's my step grandma. I've never had a real. This bitch made it a point to tell me I don't love you as much as I love Devin because he's my real grandson. No problem, bitch. Don't love me anyways. All right.
Wow, that's rude.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Okay.
You know, it's funny because everybody wants to tell you what you should do, right? And I told my grandma, well, if I was 7 foot, should I be expected to play basketball? And she said no. And I said, well, if I ran a 9.940, would I be expected to run track? She said, no. I said, just because I'm a genius, does that mean I have to do something with it? Well, yeah. No, hold on. No. And then the one that killed me is my grandma one time wanted to tell me how she's done more for black people than I have. And it's, bitch, I'm black.
And she's not?
No, she's a Caucasian woman from South Dakota. Right, because she's donated to this free thing, or you know what I mean? It's like that doesn't mean you I'm a black person. You can't do more for me than I am doing myself. Like, that is the most white privileged shit to say to somebody. And it was my own fucking grandma.
You're like, bitch, I put on a black man's boxer shorts every morning.
Yeah, I put on a black man's boxer shorts. I jack off a black guy at least once or twice a week. Like, are you even doing that? Like, you know what I mean? Like, and I think one of my favorite words when I hear stuff like that is I say, in all the caucasity.
That's a new one. I haven't heard that one yet.
Because that's the word for it, is it's caucasity. It's not audacity. It's Caucasian people's audacity. So I say, what in the caucasity? Because we don't do that.
Is that explain the name of your podcast? Because I was trying to understand the spelling.
Oh, Autastic Artist. It's a combination of fantastic and autistic.
I like it. Thank you. I was like, at first I thought it was me because sometimes I just misspell stuff. I'm like, am I been spelling this wrong?
Nope. And then that's the thing is like, I'm so like my whole goal with Superman Productions is to start letting people who normally don't get a chance to do shows, do shows. And what do you mean by that? Well, let's go look at, you know, we could go look at Tacoma Comedy Club. We could go look at Laughs. We could go look at any club, right? And there's going to be a token white guy. There may be a token black guy, but you're not going to really see any women, right? I don't think they get how, nah, right? We're bringing in Gary Owen. He's our white black guy. Yeah, right? You know what I'm saying? They don't get it. They don't get it. You know what I mean? And like, I remembered when they opened up, there was a whole poster of who they had. And it was like they had a whole bunch of guys. Somebody's like, well, maybe that's not their fault. I said, how is it not your fault? Don't you pick who comes up, right? And then I'm looking at almost a joke.
Well, I'm excited that you produce so many comedy shows in Seattle. Is that going to be happening again now that things are starting to open up, now that people are getting vaccinated and stuff?
I don't just produce in Seattle. So I got a ton of shows every month. And starting in the summer, I'm in Boise doing Superman Summer. So that's one of the things we're doing. And then on top of that, I produce a whole bunch of online content. So I do about 8 shows a month, 1 or 2 shows every weekend between podcasts, comedy shows, right? That you can view from anywhere. And once a month, I'm getting back into doing live shows in Seattle. So I'm trying my best to start taking care of that. And then every month I'm in Boise, Idaho.
And tell me your website. I have it down and I'll put it on my link on my other thing. But
it's supemancomedy.com.
Supemancomedy.com. So you'll be, I assume, posting when you have those show dates coming up.
Yeah, everything's on there. My next show in Seattle will be the last Friday in June, which right now looks like it'll be June 25th.
I'm West Coast oriented, and I know there's no way I'm going to wind up in Boise, Idaho. I hope to be making a visit to your area in the next few months, and that would be awesome to hit up one of your shows.
Yeah, I do a ton. Just come on by. That's the thing is, I'm the least favorite comedian of all the all the clubs out here, and I say that because if I can sell out my own show with 40 people, why in the hell am I not producing somewhere locally, right? Mm-hmm. If I can go to Boise and get 160 people to come out and see black comedy and all woman lineup, how in the hell am I not producing locally at my Laughs or my Underground or my Tacoma Comedy Club, right? Mm-hmm. And it's because I'm not willing to buy into the hierarchy. I'm not willing to do all the bullshit, right? Like, and I think that's the hardest part about comedy is getting through the gatekeepers, getting through the momentum stealers, because everybody knows a guy or has a guy that thinks they're better than everybody else and thinks because I've been doing this for 5 or 6 years that I'm owed something.
I haven't stalked your friend list, so I don't know. Are you friends with Jackie Pearl?
Yep, that's my good friend. She came to Boise, Idaho.
Yeah, I thought I saw a photo crossover, but I just wanted to double check.
She was on WAP, Women Are Funny, not that WAP, the other one.
And you produce, what was the other women's comedy show? What was the acronym?
So once a month I do Raw Comedy, which is Ridiculously Amazing Women. Uh-huh. Every second Saturday, that's online. And then we do Soul Sister Sundays every last Sunday of the month. And then, like I said, we take WAP to Boise every once in a while.
Nice. I haven't participated in a whole lot of stand-up, but I imagine it would be a really great experience to participate in stand-up that is all women.
So my black and gay show, my black woman show, it's not so much that it's easier. It's just that you don't have, as a consumer, you're not worried about getting racist jokes. You're not getting dick jokes. You're not getting rape jokes. Right. And then for everything else, it's just one of those where you're making sure people are comfortable. Hmm. And one of the comics who came to WAP in Boise was like, oh my God, we're doing an all women lineup and all the women are funny. And well, that was a red flag because you said all the women. You're one of those women that are just taking, you know what I mean? You're kissing ass whatever stage time you can. We figured that about her. But we also found that people often create the problems they're dealing with, right? Like, you know, I was always saying clubs hate black people and they're not letting us up. And that was true. But I was creating a problem for myself because now they won't book me because I voiced the truth. Mm-hmm. So instead of me doing my own thing, right, you can either outline the problem and probably become and take more, I guess, gruff and overall shit for doing so. Or you can just fix the problem and move on.
In my experience, every comedy show I've ever been to, there's at least one person who's really not that funny.
The worst part is most of those shows only have 3 or 4 comedians.
Yeah.
You know, most of my shows have 6, 7, 8, 9 comedians. Yeah. So if one of them's not funny, oh well, you still got, you know, a whole hour and a half entertainment.
You know, some people just don't appeal to your sense of humor.
Right. But if you do the old show where there's the opener, the closer, and the headliner, and one of them's not funny, that's like 20, 30 minutes of your time. Not
20, 30 minutes of not funny.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like just 5 or 10 or where you got one or good joke.
I got invited by a comedian friend to some comedy competition here in the Bay. You know, they invite a certain number of friends to pack the audience and then, you know, you have to vote on who the best one is and whatever. Okay, fine. And this one guy, his elaborate construction of puns was impressive. It was funny just in the length and weaving of puns this guy did was just, I can't even describe. It was amazing. And then there's this one guy was like so intimidated by everybody else that he got up there and was uncomfortable for about 3 minutes before he finally gave up. And as an empath, it was excruciating. I'm watching the guy going, I'm dying inside. Watching this guy on stage is just killing me. I had trouble even enjoying the rest of the comedy after that because I just kept feeling so awful for that poor man who got up there and just, he completely froze. It was horrifying.
You know, I froze after, I think I got booked for my first 15-minute set. I think I did 9. And I got to minute 9 or 10 and just like, I couldn't remember any more jokes, right? And that happened.
Uh-huh. Yeah, this guy was just like, didn't even get in one joke before he was just like, deer in the headlights.
I'm literally at that point where I have to remember that my weirdness is going to scare people. And the right person, it's not going to scare, but oh well.
Yeah, and that is the hard thing because as many people find me pleasant, my weirdness has scared many, many people in my lifetime. So when I am being normal, that's my acting skills. And when I am being myself and putting myself out there, I have to accept that some percentage of the population is going to find that really annoying and not like me at all. And that's okay.
And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. That's like, I just posted that I'm going to go sober.
Okay.
I don't have any weed. I really don't want to buy any more weed. I've got to go sober to get my kids back. Eventually I'm going to have to do a drug treatment, right? So I might as well just go sober.
So you have children?
Yeah, I have 5 kids.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I don't get to see any of them right now. Oh. I went through a shitty divorce, right? And yeah. So it's one of those where I'm trying to better myself. And it's not like I want to quit smoking weed. I enjoy smoking weed. But it's a, the system isn't going to allow me, right? And then financially, maybe I shouldn't be doing it anymore. It don't matter. But like, what am I going to do now? Well, now I wake up every day and I'm going to go walk and I'm going to go work out and I'm going to, you know, eat healthy and I'm going to do all these things. But what are you going to do to replace that? And I think we work with so many people who don't think about things like that.
Yeah. Well, you have to fill the space and people have different relationships with substances. I am fortunate to not have a negative relationship substances. And in my case, I only started using cannabis a few years ago as mainly medicinally because I needed it for pain and sleep. And so for me, it's beneficial and it isn't an issue. And obviously, because of my situation, it won't affect things like custody or any of that too. So for me, it's positive. But for other people in your situation, and you know, I can handle having a couple glasses of wine every now and again. Other people have a problem with alcohol and they have to say, nope, that's not going to work for them. I know quite a few comedians who've had to get sober and then dealt with the other part of that, which is maybe I'm not funny when I'm sober, which is a weird thing to think about, but that's something that a lot of comedians face.
A lot of people can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't have the patience. Not just the patience, but the, it's funny. Like I did a sober set last night, right? Mm-hmm. Not a sober set, but a clean set. And right. I think it's 6 to 7 minutes of material. And I hit I ended right at 5 minutes. And I was like, you know, if I could cuss, this would be a whole lot easier. And it's not if I could cuss, cause I've done a 10 minute set without cussing of the same jokes, but it's also a mind frame.
Right.
Like, do I need to cuss to be funny? No, I don't. So why am I cussing all the time to be funny? Well, that's a crutch, right? Do I need to be drunk to be funny? No, I don't, right? Mm-hmm. But it's one day at a time, you know what I mean? Like that's all it is. It's the first day in many. It's the first set of many. It's the first time you decide I don't used to have to say my name spelled all fucked up. I can just say my name spelled all messed up. It's D-U-A-N-T-E. Right?
So that is an unusual spelling. Is that an unusual spelling? I have learning disabilities. So I looked at your name and I was like, is that how it's supposed to be spelled or is that an unusual spelling?
That's the second part of my joke is people really have the balls to ask me if I spell my name right.
Like I know you spelled it right.
Like I didn't graduate kindergarten and shit. You know what I mean?
I know you spelt your name right. I'm just wondering if I was making assumptions about how other Dantes spelt their names.
I feel like they all spelled their name wrong, and I'm the one who spelled it right, right? But that's the other part is, like, what are you looking for? And, like, I in my post today, like, it truly embodies how I'm trying to change. Stop begging for time, attention, and opportunities. Create them. If people don't want to give you their time, then find a more productive way to use it. If you cannot hold their attention, then focus on something that interests you. And if someone has an opportunity they're holding at ransom, then make your own opportunity. Stop letting other people impede your progress, attitude, and accomplishments. And that is, it's easy for me to type that shit. It's easy for me to write it. It's hard to follow up on. Like I sent the girl a message that stood me up on Monday of, hey, I saw you mentioned me in the story Monday. Why did I do that? Because I want her to like me. I like her. Right. But obviously she doesn't like me enough. Right. And right. So it's one of those things where, you know what I mean?
Well, the other interesting parallel in comedy, which I mean, anybody who's participated in comedy and stuff, you get to the point where you realize that most people who do stand up need a therapist, man. Comedy is therapy for the comedian, also for the audience. But some comedians need more therapy than just stepping on stage. And they don't realize that, yeah, they're funny and yeah, they're able to use their pain and their in order to tap into that humor. And they use humor as their coping skill to get through their shit. And that's all great. But maybe you need a little more than that because they're also dealing with anxiety and PTSD and things like that. And that's why they're using the alcohol and the cannabis in order to even get on stage because there's a lot going on there. And some processing might help them to be better in life and better on stage, you know?
You know, I agree and I disagree. I had somebody, so I talked to somebody about this and they're like, why don't you go to therapy? And I was like, I don't want to fucking go to therapy. And they're like, why? Because my therapist cries and tells me my life sucks and how hard it was. And that just pisses me off. I have to fucking deal with it. And they're like, whoa, I was, yeah, I've been molested. I was homeless. I was been through fucking domestic violence. I fought grown men off my mom while they were trying to rape her. What do you want to fucking talk about? I've been through it. They're just like, whoa, I didn't mean it like that. It's, exactly. What do you want me to deal with the fucking therapist? You know what I mean?
Well, first of all, you had the wrong therapist.
I hear that. And let me reply before you go there. There's millions of, I just don't have the effort for that.
And it, you know, maybe you're not in that place, but for me, because I had my own thing. My father started molesting me when I was 2.5. You know, there, I had my own issues, but I internalized my anger, my frustration, and basically felt shitty about myself for the reactions that I had, my anxiety, my depression, my PTSD, my, I'm a bad person. I fucked up. It's all me. I'm screwed up. Nobody's ever going to love me because I suck. And being able to work through and figure out why I think the way I do and why I react the way I do has helped me to find more productive ways of reacting and coping, I guess, is why it was helpful for me. Not just talking about it or whatever, to have a therapist say, oh, yeah, no, that's perfectly normal. It's not perfectly normal for the average human being. But when you've been through certain things, then there are behaviors and reactions and gut reactions and emotions, which are actually perfectly normal for someone who's been through your shit, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and that's what that's, you know, I don't.
It's your normal.
That's the problem. And I talked to somebody about that. Is somebody, everybody wants you to be normal or feel this. I don't want to feel differently. I don't want to, this pain isn't going to go anywhere. This pain reminds me every day of who I want to be, what I want to be, and why I'm Suitman. This pain reminds me to find more stage time for those who are underrepresented. This pain reminds me to stand up to fucking white people and not be no bitch. You know what I mean? Like, there's, this pain drives me on a daily basis for, you know what I mean?
But do you also, but do you also have a place of peace for yourself? And do you also have a goal of where you need to be to feel peaceful in your life and your existence?
Nope.
No.
Do that. And I don't know. Do you know what I mean? Like, I remember when I was on antidepressants and all that. It was one of those where, like, I remember they first put me on the anxiety meds and all this shit, and I'm fucking driving, and I was like, ooh, it's a sunny fucking day. And I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with me? Pay attention to the fucking road. Who cares if it's a fucking sunny day? Like, I don't want to be one of those people. Oh, my God, it's Monday. Yay. I don't want to be one of those people. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. We don't need, not everybody needs to be one of those people. We need cynical assholes like me to balance out the world. There's nothing wrong with this.
Well, everybody has their way of coping, I suppose. I personally am happy to finally be in a place where I'm not constantly on edge. But the only way I got here was to be perfectly honest, shrooms. So that's part of how I found my place of peace. But that's not everybody. We all have our coping mechanisms. But if you're not using any kind of substances to calm yourself, and do you just accept that you're in a constant state of angst? Is that where you're at?
No, I'm just I'm ready to be a better person. I'm ready to deliver on some of the things I want in life. I'm ready to be better than what I've been. And so I think the whole idea for me is it's the reality of I've been doing the same thing over and over again, hoping for different results. And that's insanity.
That's true. What does it look like? What does your future existence that you feel will be where you want to be? What does that look like to you?
You know, this is it. It's advocating. It's telling my story. It's getting out there. It's letting people know that it's okay to be a big, scary black guy and people need to fucking stop treating you that way. It's okay. You know what I mean? Like, it's okay to be emotional when you're big and black. It's other people's fucking problem that they're finding you dangerous just because you're expressing an emotion, which we're supposed to have, right? It's advocating for the black kids that aren't getting the autistic or the mental health diagnosis versus behavioral diagnosis, because a mental health diagnosis comes with monthly aid.
Uh-huh.
comes with possible social security check and all these different things.
It comes with assistance in school.
All right. Behavioral disorder does not.
Mm-hmm.
Behavioral disorder leads you down to the prison system and all those different things. Like, literally, it does. They put you in a classroom where you have behavioral disorders and you're stuck with the other kids who have behavioral disorders. That doesn't sound like a good idea. I'm 6'2". I'm 200 pounds. I'm a kid with bad, you know what I mean, morals and bad acting. And you're going to put me in a class with a whole bunch of other bad fuckers?
That seems like a good way to train you to be worse.
What? No way. Really? But that's where most of these black kids with mental health disorders are being put. And then they're getting police called on them when they act up because black kids are getting arrested in fucking schools.
Well, the school to prison pipe is a thing. And I mean, people are making money off every butt that goes to jail. That's just the way a for-profit prison system is deeply immoral. And it's incredibly damaging to our society. I mean, Sesame Street has to put out episodes for little kids about what's it like when your mommy or daddy is in prison. We have so many children whose mommies and daddies are in prisons. That's fucked up. It goes all the way back to that kind of thing of not properly identifying children that need help and instead treating them as children who are problems.
And that's, I think that's the biggest thing that nobody really gets. And that's where I found my drive.
I see that you do comedy and you obviously have a passion about this particular topic. Have you considered offering to do lectures to education conferences and such like that to try to express this to the people who have possibly the power to make changes?
Yes, no. So I went through a shitty divorce. My wife accused me of being violent and got a protection order on me. And I got a couple of charges because of that. How can I put this? There's a part where I can't work with kids, or am I going to risk trying to work with kids to do so, right? And all these different things. That's the one area, right? Mm-hmm. And then the second area is private advocating.
Mm-hmm.
That may be the best thing for me to look at doing, because you've got a point. There's nobody really doing any of those things, right?
What I'm suggesting doesn't even involve children, but taking it to the administrators, taking it to the government agencies, taking it to the school boards, not necessarily working with the children specifically, but taking it to the adults who are in charge of shaping these children's lives and saying, hey, you know, this is what your system looks like from the inside, from a person in my perspective. You know, like you said, you're highly intelligent. You were able to get those degrees. I was labeled as all kinds of problem kid as a child. Too many of those kids who are highly intelligent, troublemakers, they're bored in class. They're on the spectrum. They've got ADHD. They've got these issues that if dealt with properly when they're young, they can become brilliant, productive members of society, but they're not being given that chance. So there are people in administration and in government who need to hear that message from someone like you, who's built a successful business, who has degrees, who's made it there despite not being treated as you should have been when you were young. You need to be able to speak forward and say, hey, this is what's actually happening. I'm a person who went through it. This is what needs to change. You know what I mean?
And I agree. I don't believe that anybody's ready to do that.
You don't think anybody would listen?
There's no audience. And that's the problem with most things, is it's not that I don't believe that it needs to be done. I just don't believe that it's going to happen. And I, you know what I'm saying? Like, we could talk till we're blue in the face. Yeah, it'd be great to have a panel and talk with these teachers and sit down and explain to them some of the things I went through, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how being 5'9" at 9 years old doesn't make me scary. It mm-hmm. makes me misunderstood.
Right.
Right? How being a huge kid at a young age doesn't mean anything, but how could I put it? It's one of those where you've got to be able to find somebody who really wants to hear what you have to say.
Right. And that would be the difficulty, is finding out where to get this message across.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's the hard part, is who really wants to hear me? and I'm starting to get that now. I had the Academy message me to do a TED talk on comedy for the autistic community, right?
Oh, that's amazing.
Well, it's not an actual TED talk because it's not, right? But it's the same idea, right? And then I had somebody else reach out to me. So my friend Audra, who works a lot within the community out here, and also the one who identified I was Asperger's, because when I asked her to do this podcast with me, we started talking. I said, hey, this is my friend Audra. She went to high school with me. She's Asperger's. And she goes, well, aren't you too? And I was, huh? Fuck you mean? Don't talk to me like that. Don't stare at me. What the fuck are you saying, right? And then you start looking it up, and I was like, maybe I am.
Well, it takes one to know one.
So it was one of those where I had to take it on the head and go, okay, that makes sense. So for me, it's one of those where it's just trying to figure out, you know, what's my goal in entertainment, right? Is to take over the world. I'm not going to lie to you. I want to
be... World domination.
I plan on being a comedian, producer, one day being able to be just a full-blown entertainer, kind of like Jamie Foxx. I want to sing. I want to act. I want to do movies. I want to do comedy. I want to do fucking everything I can. And then when it's all said and done, I kind of want to be like Frank Sinatra and have my own room on Vegas where you come in and I'm playing songs and I'm singing songs. And we're doing a practice show. So I want to do a little bit of everything, right? Uh-huh. But along that way, that gives me opportunity to do a whole bunch of more stuff. Mm-hmm. So once I start making money and having that success, now I'm able to, you know, donate my time to these causes. And right now I'm not worried about doing some of these things because I'm not going to get paid.
How do you feel about documentaries?
That's cool. You got to find somebody to record them. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm just saying, maybe a documentary is a way to get this message. I'm just throwing it out there, throwing out ideas.
It's totally real. Somebody needs to hear it. I need to do it. It's on the list. It's on the list of things to do, right? It's on the list of things that I'd like to do. It takes time. I can't do them all today.
Well, make me a promise. If you decide to do a documentary about autistic kids of color and fixing the system, promise you'll come on my pod and talk to me about it.
Definitely. I promise. Pinky swear.
Awesome. You know, hey. Who knows? Maybe somebody is going to listen to this pod and hear your message and say, hey, I'd like that guy to come talk about that shit for my folks.
Yeah, right. That's the other thing. Like, find the right people. Is there somebody out there who's looking for somebody who was undiagnosed autism to talk about it? Is there somebody out there? Because you can look through my school history. I went to portable classes my whole life. Uh-huh. I'd go to regular class and then be sent to a portable class. I wasn't diagnosed as mental illness is because I had great grades.
Yeah. And they're doing that to kids all over the place because they're just not, they're not properly diagnosing you, or they label you because of your height as scary.
And that's the other thing is, like, I've never threatened a teacher, but I remember, like, in seventh grade, the teacher told me I was stupid. So I told her, shut up, bitch. Well, I got kicked out of school. Did she get written up? Because I'm pretty sure she's not supposed to call a kid stupid. Definitely not being a white teacher to a kid of color who's in honors in a year early, right? Come on.
Yeah. And there are a lot of teachers, because of the system, shouldn't be in there too. That's another part of the problem.
You know, I worked in Covington. I worked in Kent School District, Foster, these predominantly white school districts that are now changing. And you'd hear in our meetings for, you know, why are all these kids here? And why do we have to accommodate them? Because you're the fucking adult. Because these kids are kids. They shouldn't have to deal with your prejudice, your racism, your sexism, any of that fucking shit. Leave that shit at the door, Mr. Green. Thank you.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, is police officers should never be called to attend to something at an elementary school. They just shouldn't. That's not where they belong. Children are developmentally not able to process things in the same way that an adult is. They are going to act out and do stupid shit because their brain is not fully mature. Their control over their behavior with their emotions, it isn't there. Teachers know this. They take classes on developmental behavior. So at no point should a 7-year-old ever be put in handcuffs.
What? Or a 9-year-old, right? And there's no reason to fucking arrest a kid at school.
Exactly.
The kid shoots up the school, fuck it. Yeah, let's do it. But I mean, goddamn. Yeah.
If the child doesn't have a lethal weapon, then there is absolutely no call whatsoever to call law enforcement. And they have schools where they actually have law enforcement patrolling on campus. how are children expected to grow up and participate in society when they've got that going on?
You know, it's hard to deal with people who don't really understand that their idea of equity is nowhere close.
Yeah. Well, I am lucky in that because I am not brown, I don't have to ever deal with people being racist towards me personally. However, when I encounter, it's more like a racist person who looks at me and assumes I'm white and then starts talking their racist shit at me, like I'm going to agree with them. And oh my, that is, I just sit there and fume and then go off on them.
That is the funniest thing I see when white people assume other white people are racist and they're not. And they're like, oh, you're allies? Oh, I'm sorry. I don't want to kiss ass to be accepted anymore. I'm not willing to, I'm just not willing to do it. I'm not willing. I don't want to sacrifice my racial pride to be accepted. I don't want to sacrifice my emotions to be accepted. I don't want to have to be less of a feeling person or less. I don't want to be less of who I am to be accepted in any different way.
If it is perfectly acceptable for Karen to raise her voice if she's unhappy with the manager in an equitable society,
right,
you should have as much right to be pissed off as Karen, as long as neither of you raises a fist or throws a beverage at somebody. They've got nothing to complain about. I mean, if I get stomping mad, how likely is it they're going to call the cops on me? Pretty unlikely, unless I start breaking shit.
Bingo.
You know?
And you just have to, it's a change in, you know what I mean? Like I talked about this on our last show, the one video where I think it was in Arizona or whatever state where the black aide is sitting on the ground pleading with the police to not shoot his.
Oh, God, that was so awful. I saw that. That was
and
awful.
Then I felt bad for both people because now the black guy knows he may literally get shot.
Yeah.
He's risking his life to protect the black mental kid who's going through a mental breakdown, but he knows he has to risk his life to save somebody else's. That's what hurts.
Yeah, and the kid knows that it happened because he was trying to protect him. And the kid has no control over his own behavior because he's got issues. And that's why we need to defund the police. We need to fund the programs that should be responding to a situation like that, which absolutely isn't law enforcement. They don't have the capacity and they don't have the compassion to observe the situation and realize what needs to be done is not aggression.
No, that's the only way they know how to respond. And I
That and they're improperly trained on every level. What is it? 6 months of training and an awful lot of marksmanship and not being trained in de-escalation, not being trained in the law and what they legally have a right to do and do not. Don't walk up and touch somebody. I mean, frankly, if an officer comes up and touches me, I'm going to be pissed because I don't like people touching me. And that's the same thing that is getting some black people killed. And they have every right. You got anxiety. You've been a victim of sexual assault. Who knows? You don't want people touching you. And frankly, if you're not under arrest and they have no cause to arrest you, they have no reason to touch you anyways. That should be one of the first day lessons for a police officer.
Oh, you're not allowed to defend yourself against a police officer. You know that, right? No, don't get me wrong. White people can do it. You'll see white people struggle.
Oh, yeah.
Fight and grab their gun. But as a black person, and the one that I love is, well, why didn't you just comply?
Yeah. I mean, once in a while, you'll see them do it to a white person, like that poor 80-year-old woman with Alzheimer's who walked out of the store with like $7 worth of stuff. And within 2 minutes of talking to her, the officer had her on the ground dislocating her shoulder because she was confused and tried to wander off instead of listening to him. Part of it is training. Part of it is screening of officers and the people that they allow to serve. And another big part of it is not having people from the communities that they serve working as police officers. I mean, if you have a neighborhood that is mostly, I don't know, black and Filipino, I don't know. Let's just say that's their average racial makeup. And then you bring in some guy from Wyoming, some white dude, and stick him in the middle of this atmosphere and say, okay, you police these people. You should be recruiting within the community. So when something goes down, they'll be like, hey, Dave, is that you pissing in that gutter? Don't piss in that gutter. Go home, Dave.
Yeah, you want them to hire people that may not shoot black people? I don't know. Like, and I think the worst part isn't even that stuff is true. It's the jokes and shit we have to deal with because of it. There's so many people that I hear joking or making shitty jokes. I think that's the hardest part in this culture, being a comedian, is all the shitty jokes I have to hear because of racism. And I don't think people really know how many jokes that is. It's a shit ton. A lot of times I've heard people make jokes about, you know why this guy got fired from the force? It's like, you must have shot a black guy, because that's the only way you get fired. That's not fucking funny.
No. And oftentimes it doesn't even happen.
You don't even get fired for it, right? No. So you're bringing up a premise that isn't even true, and you're lowering the threshold or the understanding of the real problem because you're making a joke about it.
Yeah. Well, right now, police departments are treating, aggressive racist cops the way the Catholic Church treated pedophiles.
Yeah, we're going to reassign them.
Yeah.
Give them vacation time.
Oh, desk duty. Wait, we're going to put them to a force on the other side of the country where they can do it again. Because there is no national database of all the shit that each officer does. You can't be like, oh, let's check out Officer Smith. Oh, well, it looks like, you have 25 counts of beating the crap out of people for no reason.
Let's not hire you. No, there's none of that.
There's none of that.
It's a union, too. So then I worked for UPS as a union. And so before you get fired, you get 72 chances and you've got to meet and all these different things. What you're finding is people aren't even facing consequences.
Right.
You get to choose which footage can be seen. You get to review the tape before you make a statement on what happened. Like, if I could go to court and see what you're charging me for and see what you had on tape before I had to decide what I was going to do, it'd probably be a whole lot easier, you think?
Yeah. And
these are all the things that are literally stopping cops from being prosecuted because they're part of a union and they're
some people are becoming slightly more aware of the situation. But if you're in a family that is upper class, well-to-do, white, you may never have experienced people getting pulled over for not doing anything. You may never have experienced people who are in legal trouble for bullshit. And you just assume, well, the cops only do bad things to bad people. Yeah, well, if only. It doesn't work that way.
Exactly.
So one side of my family is Native American and Portuguese, I think. And the other is white Heinz 57. So on my brown side of the family, I am now the only one who has never been arrested.
I'd believe that.
Every single one of my cousins have been arrested for one thing or another, and several of them have done prison time, and two of them may never get out.
I'd believe all of that, unfortunately.
Even my brother got busted for a DUI, dumbass. I hope he's learned his lesson. But they were in San Pedro, too, so it's partly the environment, but it very much had to do with the color of their skin, you know?
That's life. That's
I know that I'm more likely to be arrested for attending a protest.
You're more likely to be arrested attending a protest than having drugs on you.
That is a sad reality. Well, Dante, I appreciate you taking the time to come on and talk about all these social issues. The more we talk about them, the more people listen, and maybe people will learn some shit, right?
Exactly. I'll come back again. We can talk actual comedy next time, maybe.
Awesome. When you're ready to promote something coming up, let me know and we'll get you back on here.
Thank you, Sunshine. I had a blast. Thank you, Esperanza.
I'll keep track of your shows too, because I will be making it up your way one day soon, and hope to pop in and see your show.
Perfect. Sounds good. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. You have a lovely day.
Thank you so much for listening. To help fund this content, please consider purchasing some of my original and unique artwork at esperanzapaints.com or send me a gift at buymeacoffee.com/ESP Phoenix. Please remember to subscribe to this podcast and to like and subscribe to the Esperanza Phoenix YouTube channel, where you can watch this podcast as well. You can also follow Unpacking Life's Crazy on Instagram and Facebook, or read further details about a particular episode at esperanzaphoenix.com. Last but not least, a special thanks to Chelsea Weil, who composed and created the theme music for this podcast. You can find more of her music at minorbirds.bandcamp.com. Thank you again for listening, and until next time, take care of yourself and the ones you love.